You're listening to The Point. James Elser's author of All That Smolders, Nantucket's choice for the One Island, One Book for 2026. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So pretty exciting when your book is chosen for the One Island, One Book read, right?
Yes, it came out of the blue. I was thrilled, and the event was wonderful. They really did a lot, and it was great.
Yeah. All right, so this story takes place in 1980 on an island off the coast of New England that sounds a lot like Nantucket.
That is correct. It is a lot like Nantucket. I didn't use the name Nantucket because I wanted to have some geographic freedom. I also didn't want to have to repeat the real names of stores, for instance, because I didn't want it to sound like a travel guide, right. You know, but I wanted to explore the dynamics of island living rather than just the nitty-gritty details of Nantucket.
Yeah. All right. So this pretty early on, we have this shocking murder. A prominent lawyer is killed on the property of his client, who happens to be the richest man in Massachusetts. You don't waste any time. This murder comes right off the bat.
It does. And you know what's interesting about that, if I could give you just a little backstory.
Yeah.
In preparing to write a mystery novel, which I hadn't done before, I did it in honor of my mother, who loved Agatha Christie. So I read a baker's dozen of Agatha Christie novels. I took notes on her tricks and her strategies, like having 5 to 7 suspects, embedding something in daily life that turns out to be a major clue. And I also thought, I'm going to write up an outline for 20 chapters so I know just what happens in every chapter, because of course, with a mystery, there's a lot of intricate clues and back and forth. So I had it picked out. The murder victim was Quentin Douglas, richest man in Massachusetts. I got to page 5 and I came to a sentence that talked about how a man dressed like him had been murdered on his, you know, harborside mansion lawn. And it said, with all this material to sift through, the town could be certain of just one rock solid fact. Quentin Douglas was dead. But it didn't feel right to the storyteller in me. So then I added another sentence, but there they were wrong. 5 pages into the mystery, the murder victim changes. Yeah. It just shows when you're writing, the characters come alive or die, perhaps. But there's all sorts of intricacies that spring up in the act of the characters getting to know each other and expressing their personalities.
Yeah, and of course, in honor of Agatha Christie, our protagonist, Peter Christie, is a journalist who's new to the island, looking to start anew after a failed marriage and a loss of his job on the mainland. He also has this traumatic past, and he happens to be related to the mystery writer, Agatha Christie.
Yes, a distant relative. I thought that would be fun because I read so much about Agatha Christie. I thought it would be fun if somehow he would feel that there was his great-great aunt's voice in his head helping him solve these mysteries and helping him think through it. Also, I gave him some similarities. At one point, Agatha Christie actually ran away from her marriage and her life, came back later, was later discovered at a spa somewhere, came back and restarted her life and restarted her career. So Christie, in a way, Peter Christie, in a way, is running from the failures of his life as well.
Yeah. You mentioned the 5 to 7 suspects, and I hadn't thought about that, how Agatha Christie does that. But I was thinking, who doesn't love a murder mystery, right? And you're trying to figure out as you're going along, who done it? And you go, I know who did it. And they go, no, it's not that. It's like as you go along, you kind of suspect all 5 to 7 of those suspects, right?
Absolutely. And that's what Agatha Christie did so well. She gave each suspect a motivation and the means of committing the crime. And so I was careful to embed those there. It didn't all require conscious thought. It's almost as if once you get to know this genre, you sense what its force field is. The characters are each there for a purpose, to be a suspect or a helper or whatever. Yet they can also be people with depth and interest in and of themselves. And so what I felt like as I wrote, there was a force field around how mystery novels are shaped that allowed the story to move forward in a way that made sense.
Yeah. So talk about the character development. Are these characters based on real people or strictly from your imagination?
They're pretty much from my imagination. I mean, you might take one trait that one person has, you know, but the characters seem to sort of spring out on their own in many cases. For instance, there's a 12-year-old girl named Dorothy who becomes a really a main character, very important to Peter Christie's understanding of the family he's getting involved with and of the island. I didn't know she would be a character. I was on about page, I don't know, 15, describing a visit to a harborside mansion, and out of the fog, this image appeared as I was writing of a girl swinging on a rope, which of course becomes very important in the story. She then became a very important character. Now, Peter Christie's traumatic past, I have to say, this is a bit tough to talk about, but that is autobiographical. That is a memory I have. And I felt that that I was finally ready to write about it and also write about the effect it has on a character these many decades later. And although his life has a different arc to it than mine has had, I felt that I understood how it would affect a character like him.
Yeah, fascinating. It's interesting how so many authors talk about this. You're starting out, and like you said, you have your outline. You think you know where the story's going, and a character who's meant to be a minor character just will not be quiet.
Exactly. And it's one of the things that's so magical about writing a novel is that characters come to life and they exert their own will and they do things that you don't expect of them. And they also enter into different sorts of relationships with each other. And I think when that's happening, it's not only interesting to the writer, but the energy of that discovery hopefully goes through to the reader as well.
Yeah. Of course, you know, when you live on an island, news travels pretty fast and it's tough to keep secrets. And that happens in your story as well.
Yes, it does. And so there were a few things about living on an island that I thought were important. One is that everyone thinks they know everything about everyone else, but they may not know the deepest secrets. Another is that there's a certain interdependence that you need in island life or small town life, like on the Cape, but that contrasts with the independence that's the Yankee heritage that we all have up here. And finally, one of the things I love about island living, and that you see some in the novel, is that you get to know people from 360 degrees. You may sit next to them at town meeting and disagree vehemently on an issue, but then sit next to them in church or go to dinner with their cousin. And of course, another problem is you may say something unflattering about a character, and the person you're saying it to says, "Oh, that's my cousin." That sort of
So
thing
true.
happens a lot on an island, but in some, I love island life for that reason.
Now, the story is set in the 1980s, and I guess I kind of forgot that as I was reading it because it seemed like present time, although maybe without all the social media. Why 1980s?
Well, we first came to the island year round in 1981, and I felt I knew that period pretty well on the island. It was very intense for me. We had one small child, a 1-year-old child when we moved here. We had two more in the next several years. And I liked the way, okay, so for instance, you know that bumper sticker that's in the novel that it used to be nice on the island. Well, when we moved to Nantucket, there was a bumper sticker on everywhere on all the pickup trucks, sedans that said, "It used to be nice on Nantucket." And I love the irony of things like that because people who come to the island these days say, "Oh, back in the early 80s, that was great." But there's always been this sense of nostalgia for a better time on the island. Also, I did want to write a novel that was set before social media, like you mentioned, people contacting, face to face. But I am working on a sequel now with many of the same characters set in the year 2000. So the
Oh,
big contract.
that was one of my questions I was going to ask at the end is, are you going to bring Peter Christie back?
He is back with
Wow,
all
okay.
his flaws and trying to learn about being a parent and all these different things that people do as they mature into middle
Oh,
age.
can't wait to see what happens to him in the future. All right, so lots of suspects, twists and turns. Did you know who the murderer was from the get-go, or did that person reveal themselves later in the process?
I knew pretty much, but I had a couple suspects that were at the top of my list. I actually felt a little guilty that I didn't know that from the beginning because I thought Agatha Christie must have known all that from the beginning. But it turns out in one of her favorite novels and one of my favorite novels of hers, which is Crooked House, she didn't know till she was halfway through who the murderer was. So even the great Agatha Christie had her characters come to life on their own, and she discovered the story as she went on. That made me feel very close to her in some
Yeah,
way.
yeah. So you mentioned that you sort of had outlines of the chapters, and you have to, like, we're all looking at every little detail here, right? Trying to figure out who the murderer is. Talk about that process of making sure you've got, I guess all your, I's dotted and T's crossed, right? To make sure you don't have any mistakes.
Well, there may be some mistakes, but I felt like what I mentioned, the force field of a murder mystery, it helped me keep straight the characters and their roles. And what changed was, of course, they revealed different relationships with each other. For instance, Bob Brown, the loud, sort of obnoxious, but good-hearted maybe plumber, is friends with someone else named Steph Sylvan, who's an outsider. You get some interplay between them. So did have to go back and check and make sure, okay, who says what when and who did what when. But the nice thing about the story was, as it went on, it seemed to build its own momentum. And I just sort of felt sure-footed about what would come next, what would lead to the actual murderer, and what would be, sort of a red herring.
Yeah. And so how did writing this book compare with your previous novels? Because they weren't, your previous novels were not murder mysteries.
No, they weren't. They were more literary novels,
Yeah.
one about Emily Dickinson, one about John Keats. So there's differences and there's similarities. In writing a literary novel, for me, it's all about the language. When I wrote on Emily Dickinson, I just read her poems over and over. I memorized many of them, and I felt like I got a sense of the flow of her language within me. Of course, neither I nor anyone can write like Emily Dickinson, but the sense of the weight of each word and the tautness of each word meant a lot to me and helped me with that narration. With Keats, I learned more about sensuous language. But even though I didn't bring those styles to a murder mystery, I think that the sense of how to frame words and of the weight they carry came with me to a murder mystery. And of course, the thing that's similar about all those is they all have plot, they all have characters learning or not learning. They all have surprises or maybe not surprises that happen along the way. And with all three of them, those novels, they came to life on their own partway through, and I was there to just enjoy being with
Yeah. I bet
them.
it was a lot of fun writing a murder mystery, though. I would think that would be a fun task.
It was really fun. It was great fun to think kindly about leading the reader astray. It was great fun to build up suspense. It was great fun to have a big denouement at the end. There's sort of an action scene, and a number of things come together. And I want to mention one of the things that was fun for me and was different from Agatha Christie. Her great detectives, Poirot and Miss Marple, they're great characters, but they're static. But I wanted my main character to be changing in the course of the story, to learn more about himself, and somehow to have those realizations he came to about himself help him in the investigation of the murder.
Right.
And what was fun was that sort of came together on its own as I wrote.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that because we get glimpse in, we sort of learn about Peter's past through the book. We don't get it right away. Little things of what's happened to him, what happened to his marriage, what happened to his job, what's the trauma from his, earlier life. And he does seem to kind of grow throughout the book, which is why I'm really curious to see where you take him in the next book. So do you think this is going to be a series or are you just planning one more?
Well, I'm planning two more,
Oh, two more. Okay.
at least two more, and then we'll see, how long the author hangs around and is ready to keep.
The book is All That Smolders. We'll have a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Jim Salter, thanks so much for being with us. It was fun read. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.